And this part three is a little bit longer. It's chocked full of lots of info, but if you hang in there, there are some significant points to convey the overview and why I'm doing four parts for this book. And next week will be part four, which is got some, the last chapter of what can be done, some positive solutions. This is Get Lit with Literature, and this is Monk. The trillion-dollar silencer, why there's so little anti-war protest in the United States, Joan Roloff's book. Chapter 3 has to do with the contractors. Political scientist Rebecca Thorpe's research indicates that after World War II, many rural and semi-rural areas became economically dependent on defense spending. Their congressional representatives initiated local projects regardless of an absent or negative national security impact. Historian Frank Kofsky has argued that the Cold War was significantly motivated by the California aerospace industry because it feared a post-war depression. Now, how many times do I see that in the news over the past years? Oil prices rise out of, fear or that kind of stuff. The DOD reports that about 75% of its budget is paid to contractors. The revolving door between the Pentagon and the weapons firms, campaign contributions from contractor PACs, corporation lobbying, and organizations such as the National Defense Industrial Association help to ensure that the pump is primed. Military budgets, economic payouts help to gain support or silence concerning our worldwide bases and quote, special operations, end quote, warfare, conventional or unconventional, and the gradual militarization of everyday life. The top 10 Department of Defense contractors in 2020 were Lockheed Martin, Raytheon Technologies, General Dynamics, Boeing, Northrop Grumman, Huntington Ingalls, Humana, a private health insurance company, BAE Systems, L3 Harris Technologies, and General Electric. Their economic impact is multiplied many times by their subcontractors, their well-paid employees spending local tax receipts, and philanthropy. Thus, the New Hampshire Business Review reported that in New Hampshire, the F-35 program supports 55 suppliers, 35 of which are small businesses, and over 900 direct jobs, much of them located at the BAE Systems in Nashua. The F-35 program generates over $481 million in economic impact in the state. BAE is a British-owned firm. Other foreign corporations that are frequently recipients of large DoD contracts include Leonardo, Italian, and Elbit, Israeli. Now, Elbit, they are the schmucks that are spying and controlling the borderline in Arizona with the Tohono O'odham peoples. They are sinister, and they're the ones that are screwing over the Palestinians as well. So it's a whole global corporate sinister system here. It's not just the U.S. military-industrial complex, but those top 10, especially the Lockheed Martin, Raytheon, General Dynamics, Boeing, and Northrop Grumman, General Electric are probably the most well-known. Weapons production and sale is just one part of the picture. Construction, technology, cybersecurity, policy analysis, and intelligence firms. Huge contracts. Bechtel, that was Dick Cheney. Destruction as well as construction makes work for contractors. The dome at Runit Island in Aweetiaq Atoll was built to contain radioactive waste from the vast nuclear bomb testing at the Marshall Islands. Efforts for decontaminating and containing have gone on for years, but according to the Marshall Islands Nuclear Commission, more than 99% of the waste has seeped into the atoll's lagoon. Then you get into civilian businesses. The Stockholm International Peace Research Institute list of the world's top 100 arms producing and military service companies. Honeywell, number 18, FedEx, Microsoft, AT&T, Verizon, Glaxo, SmithKline, and Martin's Point Healthcare are in the top 100. No matter how small the amount of DoD funding, corporations, organizations, and their workers are not likely to protest the military mission or aid and abet those who do. Thus, it is noteworthy that between 2008 and 2018, these publishers received Department of Defense contracts from McGraw-Hill, Greenwood, Scholastic, Pearson, Houghton Mifflin, Harcourt, and Elsevier. Contractors and parts suppliers of all sizes are distributed far and wide in the state. Among the larger recipients in New Hampshire is Warwick Mills. Textiles used in body armor, a cotton mill in 1888, small businesses but with stimulations such as Portsmouth Blind and Shade, Velcro hook and loop material, and on and on. So you get the sense of how pervasive and insidious this all is. Corporate diversity. The top contractor and corporations are not only major donors to minority organizations, often, quote, partnering, unquote, with them, but also have extensive diversity and inclusion programs. L3 Harris's latest report indicates that of its employees, 26% are people of color, 25% are women, 15% are veterans, and 8% are persons with disabilities. The weapons firms have other channels for influencing progressive activists. Leading executives and board members serve on the boards of universities and nonprofit organizations, including those producing technical assistance to social justice and even peace organizations. Universities and nonprofits, including churches, receive excellent returns on their investments in military contractors. There's Blackwater, one of the most infamous private mercenary armies contracted by the Department of Defense to provide guard and service training worldwide. The Air Force spends over 85% of its annual fuel budget to deliver fuel. More than 75% of the fuel is used for transporting and conveying it prior to arrival at its destination. Humanitarian rations, ready-to-eat food for displaced persons or refugees under emergency conditions. So there again is some of the positive side, but again, it depends on what umbrella you're standing under. Here's one of my, quote, favorite small and medium and large clothing firms, some with part or all of the production process in the U.S. have contracts. One with vital support is Chaos Worldwide, K-A-O-S, which received $1.5 million DOD contract in 2000 to supply sports bras. Massachusetts Institute of Technology, number 38 of all U.S. military contractors. What is surprising is the vast range of charitable, environmental, health, professional associations, and policy organizations associated with the MIC. That's Military Industrial Complex, not to be confused with McDonald's. And also with environmental organizations. Nature Conservancy appears to receive the greatest funding via contracts and grants, which is, again, as mentioned, a mixed bag. Among DOD contractors are the Society of Women Engineers, American Dental Assistants Association, Society of Hispanic Professionals, National Society of Black Engineers, American Indian Science and Engineering Society, Asian Pacific American Medical Student Association, National Black Law Students Association, American Association of Nurse Anesthetists, Society of Mexican and American Engineers. These are likely for scholarships, internships, recruitment, or booths at conferences, which not only present the most positive images of the military, but can result in solid employment opportunities. The obvious functions of the contract system are obtaining the goods and services necessary to defend the nation, cementing the ties with businesses and nonprofits in the U.S. and worldwide, and keeping the economy going. So there is what I have highlighted as the gist, the premise that people do not question enough is this is all under the umbrella or the guise of defending the nation. So when you pull back all the curtain, and that's what it's going to come to is often you'll hear, well, it's a matter of national security or it's defending the nation. And that is what people do not talk enough about what is this actually defending the nation? So, I mean, one of the questions to ask is how does it defend the nation? A serious look at what's going on is needed, of course. Chapter 4 gets into universities and research institutes. Liberal arts scholars and universities, even those of religious persuasion, celebrated the extermination of indigenous peoples, the War of Independence, the Civil War, and the colonial expansion resulting from the Spanish-American War. Now, this is something that a lot of people don't know about. The American military's relationship with the universities and colleges began in almost an absence of mind. It arose from an afterthought afterthought stipulation in the Morrill Land Grant College Act of 1862, that's M-O-R-R-I-L-L, that institutions be financed under the terms of the act through income from the sale of federal lands and must offer military training as part of the curriculum. For 75 years, little of note developed from this beginning, but following World War II, the university-military collaboration became a vital feature of American society. These colleges at the higher institutions of so-called higher learning are built from the Land Grant College Act, which is, you know, land taken from the natives. Here's another quote. In the mid-1950s, professors at MIT and Cornell launched field projects in Indonesia to train elite Indonesian military and economic leaders who would ultimately launch the coup that brought Suharto to power and left over 1 million people dead. Generally, only the principal investigator knew of the real source of the projects. Other professors and students were unwitting. So there is an excellent example of the insidiousness, what I call the national socialist that is dark. And the light. You have professors and students unwitting connected to MIT and Cornell, two of the most respected universities that brought Suharto to power, leaving over 1 million people dead. And here's another key bit. On the other hand, a Social Science Research Council symposium conducted at the outset of the Minerva Institute found apprehension among some scholars. Professor Catherine Lutz stated it plainly. The first danger is that the Pentagon frames the question to be asked and decides which independently framed questions are sensible or important, and does both these things within the constraints of what C. Wright Mills years ago called the military definition of reality. This entails seeing the world as a series of threats to be dealt with, sorting people into enemies and allies, and focusing on the use of threat of force, physical, missile and machine gun fire, mental, psychological operations, public relations campaigns, and financial enforcement of sanctions, bribery of local actors, and arms deals. So there you have the military definition of reality, which again gets to the root of the consciousness shift needed to happen and the discussion of what is an actual threat and what is actual national security. And here's another one of John Pilger's hidden agendas where you have to read between the lines. NATO has 33 partnership training and education centers, some in NATO member nations and others in partnership countries, which includes Partnership for Peace members such as Switzerland and Finland. So, it's Orwellian. You can't go by the names of, who's doing what. Think tanks are also important, listing some of the main top 10 recipients of government, military, and contractor funds from 2014 to 19. The RAND Corporation, Center for New American Security, Atlantic Council, New American Foundation, German Marshall Fund of the U.S., Center for Strategic International Studies, Council on Foreign Relations, Brookings Institution, Heritage Foundation, and Stimson Center. The Aspen Institute, I mentioned that, has long specialized in creating links between anti-poverty and minority organizations and the national security elite. James S. Crown, chairman of the Aspen Institute Board of Trustees, is also the lead director of General Dynamics Corporation. Among its lifetime trustees are Madeleine Albright and Henry A. Kissinger, both now gone. And those are the ones that had no remorse about, killing hundreds of thousands of people. The U.S. Institute of Peace is a prime example of both silencing and militarization. And there's even an Albert Einstein Institution, which is more of a mixed bag. And continuing with the trillion-dollar silencer, why there is so little anti-war protest in the United States, Joan Roloff's Clarity Press, 2022, Chapter 5, as I mentioned, was my most underlined amazement at the hypocrisy, or whatever you call it. She begins that philanthropy and nonprofit organizations in that chapter, what is commonly called the third sector, consists of thousands of organizations, philanthropies, arts, civil rights, political reform, educational, religious, and otherwise, that are neither government nor profit-making businesses. Underpinning all these are the foundations that fund them, along with providing helpful directives about how to be effective and reasonable. Yet this sector is not independent of either government or business. Government, including the DOD, Department of Defense, and its associated departments and agencies, Department of Energy, Veterans Affairs, State, Homeland Security, CIA, awards, contracts, grants, and charitable donations, often in significant amounts, to these organizations. Military contractors are also important sources for non-governmental organizations, and even a small donation can be an effective silencer with regard to any military activities. And tracing the history of this trend, however, after the radical protests of the 1960s, corporate foundations followed the lead of the major liberal foundations, Ford, Rockefeller, and Carnegie, and starting funding civil rights, anti-poverty, and progressive reform organizations such as the Urban Coalition. They selected the groups and advocated needed reforms without threatening the U.S. empire or capitalism. The anti-war movement was not neglected. Physicians for Social Responsibility was funded by the Rockefeller Family Fund. That's the line again that I mentioned, the line, without threatening the U.S. empire or capitalism. The 60s was also a turning point as far as journalism, because there was a photo of some child, I think, in Vietnam. Yeah, in Vietnam, a child running naked or something after napalm bomb or something to that effect. And that image literally helped to shift the public sentiment to stop the war. So after that, the mass media and journalism decided to become sanitized and out of sight, out of mind. So along with the sanitization of the journalism became the under the radar, the sneaky funding and supporting of different organizations. The DOD itself and related government departments engage in philanthropy. These organizations eligible to receive donations: American National Red Cross, Armed Services YMCA of the USA, Big Brothers Big Sisters of America, Boys and Girls Clubs of America, Boy Scouts of America, Campfire Incorporated, Center for Excellence in Education, Girl Scouts of the USA, Little League Baseball Incorporated, Marine Cadets of America, National Association for Equal Opportunity in Higher Education, National Ski Patrol System, on and on it goes, U.S. Olympic Committee, Young Marines of the Marine Corps. There's another list that gets support for Free Medical Clinic. In addition to its own humanitarian work, the DOD funds relief organizations working internationally. For example, the International Rescue Committee, Save the Children, and Mercy Corps. Grantees are expected to be silent about any related military objectives and operations. Again, the 1960s, here's a quote from another book. She includes, confronted with the radical, quote from the FBI records, confronted with the radical protests of the 60s and 1970s, the foundations funded and nurtured civil rights and anti-poverty organizations that did not threaten corporate dominance and bypassed the radical anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist, and anti-war groups. These were already being disrupted or violently repressed by governments such as FBI's COINTELPRO operation. And very interesting, this point, many of the radicals, weary of protesting, were attracted to NGOs, non-governmental organizations, with adequate facilities and modern communication systems, while their leaders, tired of being ineffective and repressed and increasingly encumbered with children and mortgages, could enjoy paid employment, travel allowances, and friendly meetings with political and economic elites. Foundations supported anti-war organizations and supplied a healthy chunk of the peace movement's income. Many liberal foundations have long engaged in covert and overt operations to support imperial projection, described by David Horowitz as the sinews of empire. Now, here's one that I have... can't make this stuff up. I'm not even going to try to explain this because it's virtually not understandable. This is a quote. Press reports indicated that the CIA probably had used at least 46 foundations in an involved method of funneling funds to certain organizations. Under a method of transfer known as a triple pass, the usual procedure was for the CIA to convey funds to dummy foundations established by the CIA to act as fronts for its activities. The dummy foundations then made grants to legitimate foundations. The legitimate foundations, which also handled other funds, then made grants to certain CIA-designated organizations using the funds from the dummy foundations. A tabulation of press reports shows that at least $12,422,925 was channeled to organizations by the CIA. That is just, that's the classic example of the insidious sneakiness. And here's another hypocritical highlight. How could CIA get away with it? All indications suggest that the NGO members were outraged at the covert nature of the collaboration. Few objected to the goals of regime change or regime support. This despite their clear violation of international law as embodied in treaties solemnly ratified by the U.S. Here's one. If you've read the news over the years, you'll know NED, National Endowment for Democracy, was authorized and funded by Congress. It took until 1983 to do overtly what had been done covertly. It describes itself as an independent nonprofit foundation, but it is undoubtedly a front. It continues to this day active in Cuba, Nepal, Venezuela, and elsewhere. Since 2016, the NED has made 334 grants in Ukraine, totaling over $22 million. And another silencer factor, contractor benevolence reaches and silences citizens of many interests. These are unsurprising grants to policy planning think tanks such as the Council on Foreign Relations, Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, Hudson Institute, Heritage Foundation, Aspen Institute, and the American Enterprise Institute. Military corporations give scholarship aid to aspiring engineers who may then be predisposed to seek employment with the benefactor. So there's a lot of the youth aiming at the youth, at the younger generations. And again, jobs, security, revolving door, that kind of thing. However, military contractor philanthropy also endows a large cohort that might otherwise be inclined to anti-war activism. It funds arts and organizations and museums, including the JFK Center for the Performing Arts, the Chicago Jazz Orchestra, the Gilbert and Sullivan Society of Houston, the New York Public Library, and the Baltimore Shakespeare Festival. The Art Institute of Chicago's associates include Honeywell International and the Crown Family, General Dynamics. And on it goes. Endowment for a professorship in painting and drawing. Wolf Trap Foundation for the Performing Arts is partnered with Northrop Grumman, again, one of the top manufacturers of weapons, for arts-based strategies to help pre-K and kindergartners develop science, technology, engineering, and math STEM skills. Even the Hancock Shaker Village, once home of a decidedly pacifist sect and now a museum, has received military contractor funds. Who is aware of these funding sources, you might ask? How can people be silenced if they don't know about their secret Santa? The board, staffs, and other major non-military donors have adequate data concerning where the funding is coming from. So again, it's a matter of doing a little bit of research. If you go to see Much Ado About Nothing, there may be much ado about something. And here again is the line. The Urban Coalition was then created, fostered by the liberal foundations, and thereafter corporate philanthropy became more focused on diffusing systemic threats. Its goal was to challenge segregation and discrimination while discouraging the more radical orientations of that era's activists. Lockheed, General Electric, and Boeing became important funders for the NAACP. Military contractors have donated to every kind of minority organization. So again, it's the line and the encouragement of certain things, but the more radical and where the real change occurs, that is the line. Another silencer highlight, military contractor philanthropy serves more than merely to improve public relations and silence the board, staffs, donors, clients, and patrons of recipient NGOs. It enables corporations to shape the content of culture, especially that of youth and minorities, in tune with the values of militarism. notably via organizations such as Boy Scouts, Girl Scouts, the American Association of University Women, as well as via the public education system, private schools, colleges, and universities. Thus, our grinding federal taxes, which have reduced local school taxing capacity, are now rerouted through the super profits of the contractors, especially to schools in poor and minority districts. Instead of democratically determined curricula, programs, and scholarships, the MIC does it their way. So there again is the way this is sneaking into the overall system, the educational system, the arts, and on and on. Board members and CEOs of the major weapons corporations are also serve on the boards of many nonprofits. To indicate the scope, these include the National Fish and Wildlife Foundation, the New York Public Library, Carnegie Hall Society, Conservation International, Wolf Trap Foundation, WGBH, Boston's public TV channel, Toys for Tots, and on and on. The Catalyst, the National Science Center, and the U.S. Institute of Peace. There's your Orwellian highlight. She does mention the current big funders of virtually everything in the world. State Street, Vanguard, BlackRock, Fidelity, College Retirement Equities Fund. And she ends that chapter again with the line, there have been lone voices that urge the nationalization of the war industries, which would preclude private investment, but that is bucking the trend, as privatization is on the elites' agenda. The collaboration with the military by charities, reformers, artists, musicians, academics, and their organizations will be hard to untangle without addressing the military-industrial complex as a whole. Chapter 6 is state and local governments. Again, Junior Reserve Officer Training Corps. It's actually a section about Hawaiian plant species, native plants there. And again, they're just ignoring of the natives. Here's a quote. The objective of this program, the Junior Ranger Program, is to develop in the young people who visit Corps of Engineers lakes an awareness of the environment and the role the Corps plays in managing this environment at the lakes, and to solicit their assistance in helping Corps Rangers in serving the public and protecting our lands and natural resources. Well, there you have that double-edged sword of protecting the lands and natural resources, but still, there's that line. It's the claim of our lands. Whose lands? And many states have adopted similar measures, including requirements that men be registered before receiving a driver's license. In New Hampshire, male non-registrants are barred from state jobs and admission to state-funded institutions of higher education. So again, the militarization hook. It has been estimated that one in three police departments in the U.S. have this equipment. This was a lot of military equipment that's gone into police departments. Transferred by the DOD and funded by the Department of Homeland Security. School districts, college police, and state parks are eligible to receive this military surplus. This bounty is known as the 1033 program, named for its section in the 1997 National Defense Authorization Act. So there you have, there's the militarization of the police department, which raises the question, who's the enemy? And here's an amazing statistic. About 19% of police officers are veterans. So a lot of the belligerence in the police forces comes from, you know, people that are coming back from war zones. And follow up on the state colleges and universities. Most were funded as land-grant colleges. The Morrill Act of 1862. An investigative journalism report has documented in great detail that the Morrill acres, about 10.7 million, were taken from nearly 250 tribes, bands, and communities through over 160 violence-backed land cessions, a legal term for giving up of territory. So this is, again, the institutes of higher learning, the land taken, violence-backed land cessions. So again, underpinning the entire system of domination is this militaristic view, this militaristic way. Thanks for listening and be well.